You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister B.B. Combs. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
We're poor, Ashe. We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren and their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents, those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more!" We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths. We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Ancestors were king of old.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.B. Combs. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome, family. Welcome. We have a wonderful show. This is your brother, Kwasi. Today, you can't take it with you. Estate planning. Again, you can't take it with you. Estate planning. We have Queen Mother Shabaka that's going to be hosting the show, co-hosting the show as well today. So we are blessed to have her in our presence. We thank you for tuning in to us. And we have an ancestral profile. Sister Dee Dee, you with us? Sister Dee Dee?
Yes, sir. My mic.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hello, family. Yes, my mic was muted.
Okay. All right. Well, we got you now. So who's our ancestral profile on today?
I'm going to do Reggie Lewis today. So whenever you get done doing your thing, I'm going to do Reggie Lewis. I was okay. I was kind of talking with Dr. James, and I was like, oh, my God, who can I do? And she gave me this wonderful, wonderful young man. God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to do Reggie Lewis, the basketball player.
Awesome. All right. Go right ahead, Sister Dini.
Oh, all righty then. All right. Welcome, family, and as I said, I'm going to do Brother Reggie Lewis, and he's gone on to be with the ancestors now. But anyway, born in Baltimore, Maryland, Lewis attended high school at Dunbar High School, where he played basketball alongside future NBA players, Muggsy Bogues, David Wingate, and Reggie Williams. From 1981 to 82, Dunbar Poets finished the season at 29 zips. Lewis's junior season, and he finished 31 zips during his season. Well, 31-0. That's same thing, right, family? during his senior season, and where he ranked first in the nation by USA Today. Lewis attended Northeastern University in Boston. Over his 4 years at Northeastern, Lewis scored 2,708 points, still the all-time record at the university. His Northeastern team won the ECAC North all four seasons, and Lewis played in the NCAA men's basketball tournament every year. The 1983 to 1984 Huskies advanced to the second round to the NCAA tournament, falling one point shy of the Sweet 16 when Randall Lamb scored at the buzzer to lift the VCU over the Huskies. His uniform number was retired and hangs in tribute in Matthews Arena, the home of Northeast University men's basketball team and the Celtics original home arena, 1946. As a Celtic, he and his family lived in Massachusetts. He was the second cousin of P.J. Dozier, who wore the jersey number 35 as a number of the Oklahoma City Thunder in honor of Lewis. Lewis was drafted the first round 22nd overall by the Boston Celtics in 1987 NBA draft. The Celtics were looking to add some youth to the team, especially for the age, especially because the Big Three was kind of aging. Well, a couple of them were, and that was Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and Robert Parrish. This need became more urgent after Lynn Byers. Oh, yeah, that was another great, God bless him. And the second overall pick in the 1986 NBA draft, he died of a cocaine overdose that he was given. As a rookie, Lewis played, averaging 8.3 minutes per game under coach Casey Jones. By the second season, thanks in part to a new coach and an injury to Larry the Celtics star Larry Bird, Lewis averaged over 30 minutes and scored 18.5 points per game. Lewis was selected to play. He was selected to play in his first game in the NBA All-Star Game held in Orlando, Florida in 1992. He played 15 minutes, just scoring 7 points and grabbed 4 rebounds. Lewis averaged 20.8 points in each of his last two seasons with the Celtics and finished with his career averaging 17.6 per game. His number 35 jersey was retired by the Celtics, making him one of only two to have retired numbers without winning a championship with the team. And the other players, and that other player was Ed McCauley, I believe.
McCauley.
And thank you so much. Appreciate it. On April 27, 1993, in game one of the Celtics playoff series against the Charlotte Hornets, Lewis suddenly collapsed on the court and remained on the ground for several seconds. After he finally got up, he looked perplexed and dazed as he headed to the Celtics bench. Lewis returned briefly to the game, but was eventually pulled out due to dizziness. He was dizzy and he was short of breath. Oh my goodness! He left having scored 17 points in 13 minutes of action in what turned out to be his final NBA game. The following day, Lewis checked into New England Baptist Hospital, where he underwent a series of tests. More than a dozen heart specialists, who the Celtics call their dream team of doctors. Lewis was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy, a disease of the heart muscle that can cause irregular heartbeats and heart failure. Lewis was told his condition was most likely career-ending. However, he later sought a second opinion with another doctor, Dr. Gilbert. And this guy here was out of a Bridgewood Women's Hospital. On July 27, 1993, during an off-season practice at Brandeis University in Waltham, Massachusetts, Lewis suffered a sudden cardiac death on the basketball court at the age of 27. That's sad, family. Thank you, Brother Cotton.
Thank you, Sister Dee Dee. So, again, we have a wonderful program today. I'm going to have my mother, Yakini Sabaka, come in and introduce the program and our guest. Queen Mother, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Press the right button. Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So you want to tell us a little bit about what we're going to be discussing today? And your guest?
Yes. I want to say good evening to everyone, and thank you for allowing me to introduce our special guest, Attorney Roy Evans, whom I've known ever since I've been in Milwaukee. I've known him to be active in the community, in the cultural community, and so when he agreed to come on, I said, let me be the one to introduce him. So I want to say thank you, and thank you to Roy for agreeing to talk with us this evening on this much, much needed topic. So I'd like to just do a brief introduction. Roy Bradford Evans is a Milwaukee native and graduate of North Division High School and Dominican College. And he furthered his education by earning a Master's of Science from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, in the Administrative Leadership Program. Roy continued his educational pursuits by earning a law degree, JD, from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School. While there, he served on the Legal Education Opportunity Committee and several other committees with his leadership skills, earning him the Ray and Ethel Brown Law Prize for his outstanding student involvement. After graduation, he continued to serve the law school and was elected president of the Wisconsin Law Alumni Board of Visitors. For his community involvement, he received the LEO Alumni of the Year Award in 1982. Roy has served on numerous corporate boards, educational associations, and national panels. He's been recognized numerous times for his contributions to the Milwaukee community. He's considered an articulate and outspoken community advocate involved in programs and causes that are geared towards empowerment and improvement of the Milwaukee community, and I can vouch for that. Attorney Evans was noted by the Milwaukee Community Journal as one of the 100 most influential blacks in Milwaukee. In 2013, he was recognized with the Milwaukee Times Black Achievement Award for his legal contributions to the community. Attorney Evans is a solo practitioner with a focus on small business development, employment law, municipal law, and construction contracts. His law practice includes a focus on probate court mediation, alternative dispute resolution, and representing small and disadvantaged business entities. He has coordinated DBE participation on the Camp Randall renovation project and was legal counsel for the Lambeau renovation project contractor. Roy was instrumental in influencing changes in city ordinances as well as county and state policies and practices affecting participation in government contracting opportunities. He serves as co-counsel in the sale of county grounds property. He has worked and is familiar with policies, procedures, processes, and practices of city, county, and state and federal government in providing professional delivery services to his clients and the community. Roy was recently recognized by the City of Milwaukee with the 2019 Frank P. Zettler Public Service Award. Wow. On behalf of the elders of Sankofa Council, I want to welcome you and thank you for joining us to talk about your experience as a lawyer in serving the Black community and your observations about what we need to do as a community and how we need to have a better understanding of our collective worth and value in the process of building, maintaining, and using our wealth to our benefit. We're honored to have you. So again, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Queen Mother, and Hotep, and personal greetings to all of you. It's quite an honor to and a privilege to have been invited to participate in what I consider and all of the things that I do or have ever done as critically important. I mean, it's what you're doing is so critical to the needs of our community, providing information and insight into subjects and things that need to be discussed amongst ourselves in order to achieve a lot of the things that we're talking about. I think that libation by Dr. Carr was a perfect introduction. He talked about passing on our memories because you can't take the memories with you as you can't take your possessions with you. So we must learn how to leave them for the benefit of others. So passing on one's wealth, having an understanding of the value of who we are, what we are, what we need to do is critically important. So I am just thrilled, and Lou Ross, because I was listening to the introduction, every word, talked about pass it on. And that is a critical component of what we need to learn to do and how to do that in a way that's going to benefit us and also benefit the future.
Okay, thank you so much. So can you share with us some of your experience as a lawyer in the community and your observations?
Okay, I can do that. The subject we're talking about is an extensive subject, and it takes a lot of information. Normally, I put you can't take it with you into a seminar so that we can have charts and graphs. People like to have handouts and things like that. But it's a critical component of, I remember Jake Beeson's Why We Lose. We lose because we don't understand the value of what we have, and we don't prepare ourselves as a community. And I'm talking in general now, just a little background. I've lived in Milwaukee all of my life, grew up here. I had an opportunity to be involved in the community in many different ways, and I appreciate that. Having acquired a need to give back. I've been practicing law for about 42 years now, and I've evolved into contract law, and as the population ages around me, I'm doing a lot more probate than other work. I also serve on committees for the city of Milwaukee dealing with policy and attempting to provide information to the community as to how government works. So that instead of it working us, we can work it. But those kind of things are going to take what you're doing right now, and I'm going to encourage more think tanks, because we need more think tanks and seminars and discussions and sharing of information, because we have a tendency as a community to not have all the things we need in order to. Put ourselves in the best position to have understanding and to take advantage of the opportunities that are there and we sometimes miss. So this is a critical subject, and I appreciate having been asked to come on and talk about it.
Okay. Well, thank you again. And that's so interesting. So what do you think we need to do as a community? And as individuals in general, as community in general, you know?
Well, it's boy, that's a heavy question. And you're talking about Milwaukee, which has a unique set of circumstances that we need to step back and look at and make part of the calculation as to how we need to understand how they impact what we do and what we don't do. So that's going to take some seminars and continued discussion on your program program and think tanks and other mechanisms in order to develop some solutions for some issues. I think we as intellectuals, and I like to include myself in that, knowing that I'm surrounded by people like you and Dr. Williams and the many people that I've worked through ASCAC, and especially my grandmother, who told me I better do something in life or else she was going to come back and haunt me. So I've been trying to stay out in front of her for the longest. And we need those kind of memories to motivate us to do things. I'm writing a book now about her, all the things my grandmother tried to tell me, but I wasn't listening. And it's about all of the things that she tried to pass on to me for me to understand in trying to navigate some of the things that I've prepare yourself and have an impact in this world. And I know having an education background, having a master's degree in education, half of my law practice has been education here in Milwaukee. I spend a lot of time educating people as to what they don't know, what they should know, and why knowing allows them to be knowledgeable in the pursuit of what they want to do. A lot of times they'll come to me and want me to do something for them, and I'm saying, well, do you understand what you want done before I take on the task of doing it? I used to, when I first started, and again, there's a lot of stories associated with my development here, but as part of the education piece, when I first started in law as a young attorney, I did a lot of public defender work, and I used to have numerous young African-American boys to me who needed legal counsel. So they would call me up for legal counsel as part of my public defender responsibility. And what I would do is ask them, did they know what they were charged with and they know why they were charged? A lot of times they didn't even know what they were charged with. And so I would ask them to go to the library to look up the statutes under which they were charged. So when we had a conference, they had a better understanding of what they were facing, what they had position they had placed themselves in. And to make a long story short, most of them came back and would tell me that, look, if I would have known the penalty for what I did, I wouldn't have done what I did. And that is the main emphasis for having education. If you have knowledge, you can make knowledgeable decisions and avoid a lot of the pitfalls and situations that we fall into as a community, because we are connected. We don't see it as a connection, but we are a community that is connected in a lot of different ways, and we need to find out ways to regenerate those connections so that we can grow and be powerful. Because when you're talking about connections, I practice law, and as part of my give back to my community, I try to provide services at a rate that allows people to have things that sometimes they probably couldn't afford, but definitely need. So I feel privileged in being able to practice law and having involved into this portion of law, which is estate planning, has really been a challenge for me, but it's something that I am and again, with a part of my background and understanding through our ancestors and history and watching other people prosper and why they prosper and working in systems like our I work in the federal criminal justice system, and I serve on boards in the federal system, and I watch policies developed and how they're developed and how they protect some people and how some people utilize them. And then again, on the other hand, I see how it works against some people like myself. And again, if we don't have people at the table in these situations, you can't bring up and talk about, hey, we need to change these policies in order to have a fair impact on those who need greater impact because of the disparity that exists. But it takes us as as a community, teaching, learning, understanding, having knowledge of who we are and what we are. Probate is an opportunity to you to look at and evaluate what you have, because you can't take, you come into this world with nothing and you leave out with nothing. You can't take any of the things that you've accumulated over the years with you. King Tut tried to do that, but he wound up having people take all this stuff, and now it's in museums and things like that, which is a good thing because it's being preserved for posterity's sake. Mm-hmm. But we are always competing with those entities who do estate planning, create wealth, and pass that wealth on to their children, who our children have to compete against. And that's very difficult to do, you know, based on the disparities that exist. But there are things that we can do as a community, individually and collectively, to start looking at, or to look at more, because there are some people to do estate planning, but most people don't, unfortunately, because they don't know it, don't understand it, don't understand the impact. So it takes programs like this and having seminars like You Can't Take It With You to explain to people the importance of it. Because a lot of the times I get involved after the fact. People will call me and say, mm-hmm. Well, Mama's in the hospital and she is on her last leg. Could you come in and could you do something, put a will together or give me authority to? And all I can tell them is that it's too late now, because mm-hmm. these things you have to prepare. You have to prepare while you are physically and mentally in a position to understand what you are doing, because you can't pass on what you have or what you don't have if you don't take an opportunity to do an inventory, to know what you have, know its importance, know the value, and make a determination as to who you want to possess those things. It's just like I know you, Queen Mother, have a lot of art and a lot of treasures that are very valuable. And they're worth an awful lot. So how do you pass those on to individuals who you know deserve them or will take care of them or will utilize them in a way to provide them some benefit from the effort that you put into accumulating those things? So passing on our wealth to those who can utilize it, understand it, and appreciate it is very important. And there are basic mechanisms for doing that. And like I mentioned, you know, having a will is really important, because this is a written document that passes on your thoughts about how you want your assets and distributed and who should distribute them, putting somebody in charge of doing that. Because after you pass on, you create an estate. And your estate is all those things that you have accumulated in life that belong to you, including your debt. I mean, when you pass away, you still have debt. If you have a car and owe on that car, you still owe on that car. You can't take that car with you, so something has to be done to it and with it with regards to the creditors. So you have to take a look at all of these things. So a will provides you with an opportunity to – and wills could be, I do a lot of, I've done thousands of simple wills, just giving people an opportunity to say, if something happens, this is who I want to be responsible for managing my affairs afterwards, because your affairs continue to live beyond you. And also, if you have assets you want to distribute, it also lists that as well. And then there's another document that we should have, and it's more, instead of probate planning, I call it recession planning, because we go through periods and recessions. I've been in enough nursing homes and I still make house calls. I go to visit people and talk to them in their environment. A lot of times people are more comfortable and receptive when you're in their homes and when you can get with them outside of coming to an office where it's kind of sterile and sometimes frightening. But to get people to understand that there are things that you need to have a power of attorney, somebody when you're able to move around and get around and do things, but you are in a position that you need somebody to work on your behalf. Power of attorney is a document that gives an individual authority to do for you what you could do for yourself, but you may not be able to, like my dad was in a wheelchair and he couldn't get to the credit union or he couldn't do this. So he gave me authority to act on his behalf. I could go to the credit union or I could go to the bank or I could pay his bills or those types of things. So the power of attorney allows the person to assist an individual while that individual can manage themselves, but they need assistance. And then when my dad took a turn and had to go into a nursing facility, then he needed a power of attorney for health care, because when you're in a nursing facility and if you take a turn for worse, what the healthcare providers will do is try to, as they're sworn to do, keep you alive, keep you living, and things like that. But some right. people don't want to be hooked up, or some people don't want, Jehovah's Witness don't want blood transfusions. So a power of attorney for health care gives someone authority to make decisions on your behalf when you cannot make them. Like when my father took a turn for the worse, I had the authority to work with the doctors, to talk with the doctors, to look at charts, and to make decisions on his behalf, because he was kind of popular and it was kind of chaotic and everybody wanted to be in during these times. That's what happens. You know, it's a shock to everybody and everybody's upset and heightened sensitivities and things like that. So you need some calm and control, and somebody needs to be in charge. So and the doctors don't want to talk to, you know, everybody and anybody and things like that. They have a legally they cannot, so they need somebody in charge. So your personal representative in charge of your health care can review your documents, talk with the doctor, let the doctor know that there are things that they can and cannot do. And it got to the point where I had to discuss with the doctor if my dad didn't take a positive turn, that we would, in 24 hours from that particular time, make another evaluation. And if I had to make a decision that he no longer be supplied with life-sustaining services, then I would make that decision at that time. And,
Attorney Evan?
Yes.
Hi. I think I want to just interrupt for a minute. I think we have some callers. And that probably want to ask you some questions. So I'm going to start with number 334-414. Caller, questions or comments? Or are you just listening?
Good evening, everyone. It seems like a very interesting conversation, and I just want to listen and acquire some information. Thank you for picking my call, and I'll just be tuned in.
All right. Thank you, Brother Lush. All right.
Thank you.
We have a number at 773-552, 773-552. Questions or comments? Paula?
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead. Questions or comments?
I think this is very, very vital information, and it's so helpful to me, and I thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. 225-288. 225-288. Caller, questions or comments, or are you just listening? That's 225-288. Questions or comments, or are you just listening? All right. Sister Dee Dee, if you can make that announcement for us in regards to the phone.
Yes, I sure can. The family has been very awesome with keeping the phones muted, but family still, if we can keep our phones muted and beware, because the mics are very sensitive and they pick up all kind of background noise during the program. And then if anyone have any questions or comments, please hit us up at sankofamke@gmail.com. If you have any questions or comments, hit us up at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. Thank you so much, family.
All right, no problem. All right, we have another caller at 708-334, 708-334. Question or comment? All right, 505-340, 505-340. Question or comment, caller? That's 505-340. Questions or comments, or are you just listening, caller? Okay. 414-839, 414-839. Question or comment? Okay. And 414-758, 414-758. Questions or comments? Caller?
Yes, yes, I have a comment to make.
Okay.
I want to thank Brother Roy Evans for being on the talk show tonight, and he's given out some very, very valuable information. And this is a specialty in the law that you don't find too many of us representing, so I'm glad to know that all of the, among all the other things that Brother Evans is doing, he's providing this service as well for estate planning.
Well, and I had question.
Yeah, I had a situation where my grandmother passed away, and we couldn't locate her will, and I was concerned that, you know, everything would be, you know, caught up in probate estate, you know, probate court. Because probate, it takes several years sometimes for people to, you know, get their matters resolved going through the probate court. And I was concerned about that. And then I discovered that if the estate is under a certain amount, you can avoid going through probate court. And I just wanted to see if you could comment on that, you know, where you can avoid going through the probate court if the estate is under a certain amount.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that question. Yeah, I had just been rambling, throwing out some basic general information, hoping that it would invoke some discussion because, again, this is a complex area. And what I'd like to do is stay a little general and not get into specifics because every situation is different and needs to have insight as to what the specifics are for your particular situation. But there are some general things you brought up. Probate. Yeah, probate is after a person passes away, you probate the will. Some people probate the will and some people don't. The people who don't probate the will don't have many assets. And so they may not have a home or they may not have many assets, or they may have given what they had away to those they wanted to have them. So there's no need to go through the process of probate. But some people have property, property in Mississippi. They have cars. They may have multiple families who are, you know, have some interest in the residues of the estate. You also have creditors who want to be paid out of that person's estate. So each circumstance is slightly different. And I'd like to go through probate because probate provides a legal framework there's a little cost to it, but it provides a legal framework that guides you from point A to point B. because if you don't have it, then it's really chaos. I mean, I could tell you stories about people who had wills or didn't have wills and the chaos that it caused. And what I'm trying to do is think overall, we need to, instead of getting in individual stories, which there are plenty of, is talk about the overall need of what we need to do as a community to start thinking about how we need to focus on getting our affairs in order and building a better platform for being able to understand the wealth we have and pass it on for the benefit of like our children. I said before, you know, our children have to compete against children of those who get our wealth. If we don't plan right, for instance, if you don't have a will and you do have some assets that are probatable, if you don't have a will, what the court will do is appoint an attorney. And normally they appoint attorneys that they know. And those attorneys will charge fees. And if you have property, they will get one of their friends to go in and appraise the property for a fee. And then before you know it, they will manage the estate and pay off the bills and then pay themselves. And before you know it, the estate is gone.
It's beat up.
I mean, so if you don't have a will, you open yourself up to the vulnerability of the process taking over and again dissipating what you should have passed on to those you would want them to have your assets by surreptitiously, you know, providing a service that you know, enriches them instead. And I know what we're up against. I was talking with a colleague the other day who, and just to give you some just brief example, I've known him for about 30 years. He's an attorney. We've golfed together. We've talked together. He went to Marquette High School and lives in Wauwatosa. And we were talking, and he made a statement a couple months ago that, the disparities are no longer issues. And, you know, I found out his political position on race and things like that, so we were having a different discussion. So I had to say, well, you know, no, the disparities have not gone away. If you look at this, I'm a graduate of North Division High School over 50 years ago, and during that time, there are less than a dozen black attorneys who have graduated from North Division High School. But if you look at Marquette High School, for instance, Marquette High School is a feeder for Marquette University. Marquette University is a feeder for Marquette Law School. Marquette Law School is a feeder for all of the local law firms whose mamas and daddies are the business owners and bankers and so forth and so on. And I say you go to the Downtown Athletic Club, the Milwaukee Club, the Italian Community Center. You're married to your sorority. I mean, so you have all of these mechanisms set up for you, and the disparities, the system of disparities, don't allow for there to be any parity. So we've got to look at that when you evaluate and make statements that, you know, things are a lot fairer now. No, they're not fair, but we can do something ourselves to plan to do what we need to do in making it fair, because they're not going to make it fair for us.
I appreciate that, Attorney Evans. I'm going to do a sponsor announcement.
Okay, sure.
Stand by for a moment. EDOC Advice, it's a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that make sense to you. It's EDOC Advice. Okay, thank you. You know, I have a question for you, but I you know, we're going to be going to the break pretty soon. But my father, before he passed away, most people, you know, he had Lou Gehrig's disease. Most people die within 3 to 5 years.
Yes.
And my father had it for about 22 and a half years. He had remarried prior to the passing, and then his wife that he remarried, she got sick, and she passed before him. She had got cancer, and she passed before him by several months. And her family, at the time, I was a police officer in another city, but her family ran over there. As soon as she passed away, I was at work, and they took off. They just almost took everything out of the house.
Well, that is not uncommon. Not to cut you off, you know, that is not uncommon because of the situation. I wrote an article back in 19. I forget what it was called, "The Vulturization of Death." I've watched so many situations where people have swooped in. See, when there's nobody in charge and where there nobody have authority, these things happen because people take advantage of situations, you know, that are left vulnerable, and we leave our folks vulnerable too much.
Yes. Attorney Evans, now when we come back from break, I have a question to ask you, especially on what you just spoke on.
Yeah, I would imagine that there are a lot of popcorns going to be going off here, and people are going to want to grab onto some nuggets because that's going to provoke some memories. So there are a lot of things that you probably want to know about. So we can talk about some of those things when we get back.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I have so much information in regard to what went on and just so many different things. But I'm also going to talk about our sponsors again. Do you have a service you want others to know about? If you want to become a sponsor, if you've written a book we need to read, consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, money sign, capital N, lowercase IRVANAINSTI, and PayPal, Sankofa. All right, thank you. When my father passed, you know, and I told you they came and they got everything, and I found out what happened, and my father, he couldn't talk, but he had a computer where he could use his foot and he could, you know, print that information up, and I'd look at the computer, and he told me what happened, and, you know, and I went over there, and I just called up one person, the mother of all the sons and daughters, and told them they need to bring everything back, and if they didn't, I was going to come over there. And fortunately, they brought everything back. They decided to listen to me.
Well, as a police,
it doesn't always work out that way.
Well, as a police officer, you may have had some extra incentive for them to cooperate.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I can tell you some horrible situations where people have been, you know, some people call me from the funeral home and says, "Well, look, you know, dad, son from that we didn't know he had from St. Louis came up and got the keys to his brand new car." And didn't even come to the funeral and left, thinking he had something coming. And I'm saying, well, who has authority? And no authority was passed to anyone. So I said, well, there's a couple of things. Nobody has authority, so you can't now assume authority because authority has to be passed through an individual who knowledgeably gives
it to you. I need you to hold on to that thought. We'll finish that conversation because we're getting ready to go to station break. And we come back, we really need to engage into that situation. All right. We thank you. Yes. To be continued. So we will be back shortly after the station break and to discuss more of the situations and scenarios. I mean, I was thinking about even the nursing homes, I heard that they get to assume the wealth of people that are in the nursing home for so long, but they have a bill.
See, this is why we need seminars to talk about the whole thing, because this is not doing it, you know, much good. This is just
right.
Yeah.
There's so much information that needs to be put out there. Yes.
And I'm willing to share it.
All right. Appreciate you. All right.
Thank you, my brother. Come on.
an awakening media lineup. All about times or Eastern Standard. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective with host Brother Oshie. On Monday evenings from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. On Monday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. On Monday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m., on the first and third Mondays of each month, Conversation Reparations. Conversation Reparations. On Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. On Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. From 8 to 10 p.m. on Friday evenings, Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot Booker and his co-host Brother Richard. On Saturdays, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with host Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. And on Sunday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and his co-host Brother Richard. These are our lineup times. We thank you for your patronage, and please, by all means, check us out. You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Right, welcome back, family. Welcome back. We are here with Attorney Evans, Queen Mother. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to let you know that we have a message from a listener who is expressing great appreciation for this information that's being shared by Attorney Evans, and ask if we can get more explanation of the general principles that he was sharing with us before we get into specific cases.
Mm-hmm.
So can we get Attorney Evans back to continue?
Yeah, thank you, Queen Mother.
Yes.
And yeah, it's difficult to get into specifics because everybody's situation is unique and different. You know,
yeah.
So talking about the general things that everybody, the common elements that we need to talk about, but the specifics are really important. That's why we need to study and have a better understanding of this whole concept of probate and preserving our wealth, passing it on, because we talk about why we are losing and why we are this and why we are that. If we stop to take a look, there's some we have some leaks in our systems that are not allowing us to accumulate those things that we need in order to accomplish what we are trying to do. Yeah, I had was talking about the before we went to break, who's in charge, because that was a question that I was asked. And if you're going to be, you mentioned that your dad was not able to keep people from coming in. See, this is where the power of attorney comes in. He gives you power of attorney to act on his behalf. So you have legal authority, but you have legal authority as a police officer that may have given you some clout that. But the power of attorney gives you written authority to act on that person's behalf. You can have people arrested, or you can have things returned, or you can sue people and those types of things. So who's in charge and who has authority is really important. So let me just – so the three documents that you should have a power of attorney for health care, and a will.
Right.
And the basic elements for preparing a will, first of all, I encourage people when they call, I want to put a will together. I'm saying, well, discuss your plans with trusted family members or a friend. If you want to put a will together, talk to them. Talk to someone who you are going to allow to be that individual or represent you after you're not here. Somebody that you can trust and somebody that you know will take on the responsibility of probating your estate properly. Because, again, some people are designated personal representatives, and the personal representatives, waste the estate and spend the money and do all kinds of things that they're not supposed to. In that instance, sometimes the court will require a bond for a personal representative. But most of the wills I do, I tell people, get somebody that you can trust so we don't have to have them bonded, because it's difficult to ask people to work for you and then they have to pay to work for you on top of it. So, most of the wills I put together, so the personal representative can move forward without a bond. So you need to discuss, family, sons with mothers and fathers. I know I've discussed with my sons and my daughters and wife, and we put our wills and documents together. So, they're together. We know and understand and are comfortable with those things right now. You're on the way to the last minute, and then there's a panic, and everybody is running around trying to figure out what to do. That's not a good time to try to put a plan in order. The plan should be prior to, in anticipation of something unfortunately eventually happening. So pre-planning is important. Discuss your plans with trusted family members or friends who you want to be a part of this. One of the things I ask people, I say, well, do you know what you have? Most people don't know what they have. And if they knew what they had, they don't know what the value is of what they had. I was speaking with a lady, and I was talking with a daughter, and she said, well, I need to get a will. And she said, I don't need no will. I don't have anything. I said, well, I'm sitting here looking at all of these angels that you've collected over all of these years. And I took a little art history, and I know right there is a Hummel. And I know those Hummels are worth an awful lot of money. So come to find out, I got her to have her grandchildren put numbers on them and do an inventory of what she had. She had over $9,000 in angels. And that Hummel itself – was $800. See, and if you don't have somebody in charge and understanding what you have, you don't want your drug-addicted niece coming in, getting your Hummel, taking it to the barbershop to get a $10 bag of drugs. I mean, that is not an understanding of the value. See, we have passed that value on to somebody else who will take advantage of it, and, you know, it's gone. So you need to have somebody in charge, and you need to do a written inventory. A lot of people say, well, I don't have this. And I say, well, aren't you from Tennessee? And then you, yeah, well, my uncle lives on that property. And I'm saying, well, find out, you know, whether you have some interest in that property, because that is part of your estate. I mean, they can't just take you out just because they live there and pay the taxes. That don't mean that they own the property. So I try to get people to think about what they do have, and then let's get some value on it. Some things are invaluable. I know I have I acquired from my great grandmothers and grandmothers and through my mothers some quilts that I know are valuable. So what do I do? Do I leave them vulnerable, or do I develop a mechanism to pass those on to somebody who I can trust will appreciate them? Just a remedy for that. What I plan to do is to set up a trust in the name of my mother and father, the Will and Sadie Evans Trust. And those quilts will be a part of that trust. And that trust will be given to a museum or a repository that will keep those quilts together as part of the legacy and history of our family in my mother's and father's name. So you can do things like that, set up a trust for something that is valuable. So having a written list of your assets and your liabilities, what do you owe? Who do you owe? Because once you pass away, you still owe, because you have to give notice to creditors when you pass away. And creditors have so much time to submit their bills, and these large credit card companies and other places, they hire people just to look at the obituaries to see if they match up with you know, their client list, and they will call and contact you wanting their money. But then again, you know, in those kind of situations, you can, if you've got legal counsel, you can negotiate down, because, you know, a lot of times I tell them, well, you take this or you get nothing. And sometimes they will settle and resolve that. But your debts are also part of your estate, so you want to make sure you have those together. And then you want to get an attorney who is knowledgeable. You don't want a personal injury attorney, or you don't want a attorney that is not knowledgeable of this area, because preparing your documents is critically important. Estate planning is critically important. And putting it together right is critical as well, because everybody is just like, there's so many facets of law that I have some basic understanding of, but I don't have any in-depth knowledge, and I don't practice in those areas, so I'm not privy to a lot of the nuances that are necessary in doing the right thing. So you get an attorney who has some knowledge of probate. And then you put your wishes and your desires into written form. You got to have it in writing. And the thing is, you've got to be competent, because what I like to do is get information, put a will together, and I always make a home visit to sit and talk to the person who the will is being prepared for, so I can talk to them to make sure that they are competent and knowledgeable of what they are signing and what they are doing. Because a lot of times what people do is force relatives to sign documents, you know, handing over their property. So I don't want to, and I've had to testify in court to the competency of an individual, because people will come in and they will contest these. So you want to do it right, and you want to do it proper in order to protect yourself as well. So I make sure a person understands, so when they have these documents signed, they're being signed with my comfort and knowledge that they know what they're signing, and they're doing it of their own free will. So you want to get it in legal form. Normally, a simple will is 3 or 4 pages, and it will have your name if you want a special burial request. Some people want to be cremated. I had a lady who wanted 2 funerals. She wanted 1 here. She wanted a certain preacher. She wanted a certain song. She wanted a certain dress. Then she wanted to be shipped to her hometown in Tennessee where she wanted it. But this was her desire.
Right.
And you want to carry out her will and her, you know, as practical as possible. And we were, this is how she wanted to spend her money. And this is what her money was spent on. Okay, mm-hmm. So you want to put them in legal form. You and most of the time I leave burial up to the discussions between. You don't necessarily have to put in specifics. You just say I have had a discussion with my personal representative, and they know what I want. And these are the kind of things that you don't necessarily have to put specifics in there, and unless you want to. Then you would have a personal representative, somebody who you would want to represent you in probating your will. You want somebody that you can trust, somebody that you know, and somebody who is willing to go through the process of making sure that your bills get paid and that your assets are distributed as you request. You also want to have an alternate personal representative, just in case the person designated. My wife is my personal representative. I'm her personal representative. And if we're in a car accident together, then both of us are gone. And then our daughter becomes our alternate personal representative. So you want a personal representative and you want an alternate personal representative. Then you want to put together your heirs. If you have children, and a lot, you know, I've had a situation where a man was married 3 times and he had a dozen children, you know, so it set up a complicated situation. And the thing is, however, you can designate your, like if you got 3 children and you only want to have your proceeds of your assets given to 2, you can name those 2 individuals, and that 3rd one, they can contest it. But if they're not named, they're not in it. Because, again, right. you have a lot of families. I had a lady. And if I mention her name, you know her. She's got 3 schools named after her that called me up and said, look, I want my grandson out of my will because he done stole my furs. I don't know where my rings are at. You know, my microwave is gone. So he ain't got nothing coming. So right. I want him out. See, a lot of times people, you know, a guy was living in his mother's basement and set up an appointment. Here he's 50-something years old in his mother's basement, you know, for years and years and years, not paying rent or any of that, and he thought he had a whole lot coming. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. Have you paid rent in these last 10 years you've been living here?
No.
And I'm saying, well, if I'm going to do her estate, then I have to also look at her debts. And I calculate that if we just do $100 a month for the last 10 years times 12, you know, this is how much you owe the estate.
Right.
So, I mean, so you know, and you can be in a position to deal with those things, because a lot of times people think they got stuff coming and they don't. And just this last example is that a lot of people think
you don't deserve nothing.
Well, that's another thing. This is why your will goes forward. And not allowing those who want to just come in and take stuff and don't deserve things to you, it's your desire, what you want to do. But a lot of people think that, and Wisconsin is a marital property state, a lot right. of people think that if you're married and your spouse passes away, that you, and say you own a house, you automatically get the house. But it's not that way. If his name and your name is on the house, then half the house is his. And if he passes away, half the house is in his estate, and it doesn't automatically go to you. So there's a process in your will that, you know, what I encourage people to do is just will your portion to your spouse, and your spouse wills her portion to you, so you can take care of the fact that, you know, you don't have to go through an individual process, you know, in order to determine Leon. I mean, so knowing the law is critically important. And you can also do when you you could designate things that you want to give people. If you have family heirlooms, I know some people have jewelry that that have been passed down. Who do you want to give your precious heirlooms to? Who will? I mean, it's just like, and I know Dr. Rogers can attest to this. I have quite a few books of value that have been signed by some of our ancestors that have value. And who do I give those to? Who will appreciate them and take care of them? And you know, let alone extrapolate the knowledge, you know, that is in them. That's on them. You know, but who do you give those to versus having your stuff in somebody's basement and there's a flood and get moldy and you have to just throw it away? That's value just thrown away. So you want to make sure that you designate things that you want people to have as keepsakes and heirlooms who are going to continue the tradition. And if you give them an heirloom, make sure they have a will to pass it on to somebody so you can keep that tradition. Because if not, you know, somebody will, well, I'll take it to the pawn shop, and that ends the tradition. You know, so there's a lot of discussions that you need to have in the process of putting these. And these discussions are difficult and sometimes tough. But once you get them started and once you have a framework, you get a sense of relief because you know you are doing something for yourself and you know you are doing something that is going to provide something for, I mean, why did you accumulate all these things? So you can pass it on to somebody else so that they can have some power as well. And then again, you can leave, a lady had several organs in the piano. She wanted to donate those to the church. So
right.
They were designated, and the church got those because on the inventory it said that these items go to the church. So there are a lot of things that you can do in the process. That's why each individual will is different than the other. And then after you put those things together, you have your personal representatives, then you get assigned in front of two adult witnesses. And once you do that, you've got your will, and you can either register it with the probate office, which I encourage people to do. It costs $10, and you register it, and they have it on file. Or you can put it in a safe place. But what I warn people is I don't keep copies of anybody's will because an unsigned copy is no good. It does you no good.
Say that again.
I don't keep copies of your will,
right?
Because a copy is no good. What good is a copy? The original is the only document that has any. The original with your signature, witnessed by witnesses, is the only document that. Because people have called and says, "Well, I know Mom had a will and you did it for her, and you know, well, if I gave you the copy of the will, that would do you no good anyway." So you have to treat the will as an important document and put it in a safe place. That's why I encourage people to just go and register it with the probate office, and they'll put it on file, and they'll have it there for you.
Okay. Tony Evans, we have some.
Sure.
I was going to say we have some callers. I'm going to 601-402, 601-402, caller, questions or comments? Okay, 773-519, 773-519. Caller, questions or comments? And then we have 334-414. Caller, questions or comments? Or are you just listening? All right, go ahead, Attorney Evans.
Yeah, well, a lot of times, and it's difficult. This is a tough forum for people to ask personal questions. A lot of times, this is why, you know, talking general is good, and I'll have people to either call me or email me, and I'll take time to discuss the specifics to give them some tailored advice. know, just some general information that will help answer their questions. But again, there are all kinds of and what I try to get people to do is I know the statute, Wisconsin statute 851, which deals with probate, allows for you to they have the Wisconsin statutes online now, or you can go to the library and get a statute book. There is a lot of information to understand it. This is why you need legal counsel. But you can, if you want to read up on probate or get some thoughts or generate some questions, read up on Wisconsin Statute 851, and that will provide you a lot of information. What I try to do is provide people with just the basic elements of the power of attorney, basic elements of power of attorney for health care, and the basic elements for a simple will. And then what I do is a probate glossary, a glossary of terms, so you know what the terms are and get used to them. Like beneficiary, what is a beneficiary? It's a person you designate in your will to receive your property. Okay, durable power of attorney. A lot of people will get that mixed up with a power of attorney, but it is a power of attorney for health care. It's a document that designates a person you trust to make critical health care decisions on your behalf. We were talking about the power of attorney. The power of attorney for health care is another document that takes some developing through your personal needs and desire. An estate. What is an estate? People say, well, all of your assets and liabilities, your property and your debt is part of your estate after you pass away. I mean, you own these things. They're in your name. You have a responsibility to them. If you got a lottery ticket and you're gone and a lottery ticket hits, that lottery ticket is part of your estate because it was in your name. Somebody can't claim it, but that's part of your estate. And you want to make sure that whatever that is, or property that gets divided in Mississippi that you missed out on, or whatever, but you want to make sure that anything upcoming is also included as part of your estate if you have some input in ownership. Sometimes there are people who have minor children, and so you may want to designate a guardian for your minor children. And a guardian is somebody you name in the will to appoint to look after a minor. I know that when I was in law school, there were several white guys who were in law school who were, I wonder why they were there, but come to find out that their grandfathers had left them in his will $500,000 apiece, but the only thing they had to do was to get a law degree. It didn't mean that you had to go to class or that all you had to do was get that degree. So, and these guys, they did all the things that college kids do, I guess.
Right.
And I come to find out that not only were they had this $500,000 apiece if they got this degree, they were living. Their rent was getting paid. They were taking vacations in the summertime. Their cars were paid off of the dividends of that $500,000 that they had coming. So if they hadn't completed college, at least they got a subsidized opportunity to get that education. But then again, when we graduated and I talked to them, they were about to get their $500,000, and I had to come home to student loan debt and a family and having to start a work. So, you know, it's there are ways to set these things up to make sure that if you have it, to make sure that you can provide for your future and future generations to come. So so an heir is a person who has personal legal rights to the benefits or the residue of your estate. Like your children are heirs, and you have to designate them because, again, sometimes people have multiple families and multiple kids and multiple ex-wives or ex-husbands or something like that. So it could be kind of complicated. I knew a gentleman who had a business, refused to do a will, didn't want to talk about it, but he had about six houses. He had a tavern business. He had property in Mississippi. And he had all of these things, and he had about a dozen kids. And it was total chaos. Mm. It was total chaos. And all of that he had accumulated in life was going to get wasted, taken. Nobody was in had any authority, and it's just unfortunate because all of his efforts in life are now for naught. And again,
Are you saying he didn't make out a will?
Pardon?
He didn't make out a will or anything?
No. He was a business client, and I encourage all my business clients to make sure you protect yourself by at least doing a basic will. And some people are... it's just like some people don't want to take COVID shots.
Right.
Or some people don't believe, Biden is the president. I mean, there's just some people that just, or some people don't want to talk about it. Or some people, you know, there are folks who just are reluctant to do things. And they're not here, so they're not suffering the penalty. But those who they do leave here are suffering the penalties. And it's difficult for me to watch our wealth as a community, notwithstanding all of the grocery stores that take our wealth and all of the other stuff,
right,
the wealth that we do have amongst us being dissipated and going to other folks. I would rather take what I have and betroth it to my high school, or give it to my church, or give it to Sankofa, or, you know, for safe, my books to Sankofa for safekeeping or something like
right.
that. I mean, so, you know, yeah, there are different situations, and we really need to have a better understanding of what we can and should do. And again, everybody has a personal story and a different situation, which needs, some personal advice. And again, probate is just.
I'm going to try another caller. We have someone.
Okay, sure.
505-306, 505-306. Caller, questions or comments, or are you just listening? That's 505-306. 505-306. Questions or comments, or are you just listening? All right, go ahead. We gave them the opportunity to chime in. I guess we're just listening. Go ahead.
So I have a question.
Question.
Oh, okay.
Yes. The examples that we've been talking about were people who were at or near the point of making their transition. And many times we find that people get to that point without having even thought about an estate plan.
Yeah.
So, Attorney Evans, what would you, at what age should we start planning? I mean, should we wait till we get to the senior citizen, or should we do it earlier?
No, you shouldn't. I mean, you don't pass away all senior citizens. I mean, you know, young people pass away. I mean, when you get to a point where you believe you have assets and you believe that what you have invested in needs to be protected, where you understand that the value of what you have need to be passed on to somebody to help them move forward in life. So no. And especially don't wait till the last. See, I've had to tell people that, well, it's too late, because a person has to be knowledgeable of what they're doing. A lot of people like to wait till the last minute. Like I said, hey, I need you to rush over here to the nursing home because they're about to pull the plug. And I said, well, it's too late. I have to be able to talk to that individual and make sure that they are knowledgeable. So if I have to get on the witness stand to swear that when I talk to this individual and prepared his will, I can truthfully say that when I talked to them, they were knowledgeable, they knew what they were signing, and this guy wanted to get something for nothing by contesting the will, you know, is not truthful
right.
by saying that this person was not competent. Because a lot of that happens. You know, there are wills get contested all the time. Some people feel slighted, or see they got something coming, or think they should get more than they they easily go get an attorney and they contest the will. And they want to first to say that, well, that person was, you know, signed the will and they're incompetent. No, in the will, as part of the will, it states, before you sign it, that you are, the last part of the will is that, in making bequests as set forth in the foregoing paragraphs of this, my last will and testament, I'm in full possession of my faculties. I am not impelled by duress or undue influence, but having in mind all of my relatives and associates, both by blood and by marriage, it is nevertheless my desire that all my property be given as stated. So when you sign that, it indicates that what you have bequeathed to individuals that you have named, and if somebody's not in it, then they got nothing coming. They can contest it all they want, but the will is the document that controls. If you don't have a will, then people can go to probate court and they can start a probate process. And then, again, like I said, they will appoint an attorney. And then, you know, because a court won't try to decide what you should have decided. All they will do is look at what the situation is and make some judgments on whether you are eligible to receive benefits or you have no standing to receive benefits. So prepare. Everybody should have a will. This is why I try to encourage, as part of my community give back, everybody, and you can go to whoever you want. You don't necessarily have to come to me to get a will, but you should get a will and have it done properly. And have somebody take the time to explain to you what it means, what the impact is, so you'll be knowledgeable. Because there's no need of putting a will together and you're not knowledgeable of what you did and why you're doing it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of moving elements in probate, and man, I could tell you stories having done so many wills and been involved in so many situations over the years. But again, my desire is to want to see my community more knowledgeable about those things, because we talk about a lot of things that impact our lives, that are negative, that keep us. But if we stop and kind of think and take a look, we can develop some mechanisms for reversing some of that. But you got to have knowledge. Right. You got to know what to do. So what I try to do is put together wills for people, and they can be examples for the rest of their families. Because after you get a will and you talk to your kids, they know you got a will, then they know they got to toe the line or they might be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, knowledge is power. And too often we don't have the knowledge of how government works or how the process works. That's why I try to get people, before we sit down and talk about an issue or a problem, what is the legal parameters that affect this problem you're dealing with? And then we're looking at, you know, then we could better understand how we can go about resolving it. Because it's easy to say, well, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. You just pay me. And I don't think that's the best route to go. I think people are knowledgeable. And I hate to see it a lot of times, you know, representation. And this is why I try to encourage people to stop watching court TV. And when you get an opportunity, go sit in the actual court to see the process at work. Because court TV, you don't have a mother who's crying because her son is going off to prison because he's innocent. I mean, that's the kind of impact that they don't train you for. But these are the kind of things that make you think differently. Or, I mean, there's all, but yeah, getting real life situations. This is why I try to take young people down to the court to get them, because a lot of times people go into the courts until there's a conflict or there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, you know, when there's a conflict or a problem, it's too late. What we can do is avoid some of these things by talking about and discussing and sharing with each other, you know, the processes. So we'll understand what to be aware of and what we need to do in order to, again, we need to accumulate wealth. We're not accumulating wealth as a community. And I'm specifically talking about Milwaukee right now. We are so discombobulated as a community. Our institutions are not set up to provide us with the knowledge and education that we need. And I know it's a difficult task because, you know, our education system has been putting people out here who have a full understanding. The poverty that people live in is, and I'm dealing with this as an attorney every day because I live right here on North Avenue in the community, accessible to folks. I practice more law raking my grass than you can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, people will stop and chat. But
I appreciate you. I appreciate you, Attorney Evans, for just staying in the neighborhood. So many people have elevated to positions of much success like you and just left the neighborhood. So I appreciate your commitment, and that is just awesome. I'm going to call on Dr. Janie James. She has a question for you. Dr. James?
Thank
question
you.
Question or comment?
Yes, thank you very much. I learned coming to Milwaukee that there were quite a number of people who owned their homes. They took great pride in paying off their mortgage. And when we talk about acquiring wealth, and we're typically doing this for our children and our families, I think that we do a disservice when we don't, throughout the years, teach our children some of these terms and the value of certain things, because you'll see so many businesses that revolve around purchasing that house that seems to be such a burden to you. And so you have people whose houses are lost, as I call it, a paid-for house, and people are either selling it for little or nothing, or they are losing it because they don't pay the taxes or the insurance on it. So you're talking, which could in these days be often $100,000 or more, that is just lost.
Wow.
And I think is such a tragedy, even if it was given, written that it would be given to the church. But to see this kind of money being lost because your children never learned and we never bothered to tell them about this is, I think, a real tragedy. And what sort of suggestions do you have to help to make sure that our children learn this kind of valuable information?
Well, it's got to come from us. We have to know ourselves first. If we don't know, we can't pass anything on. And I think the lack of knowledge is being passed on to our children in bunches. This is why we get a lot of the behaviors that we get, because people are not sure they understand. This is why I have people, you know, look up the statute or read this first or get an understanding or let me provide you with something that will enhance your knowledge so that you'll have a different, let's start with a glossary of terms so that you will be comfortable with what they mean. And you can ask questions and we can learn together. But until we start, like we used to have Saturday schools. And so who had school on Saturday? But the Saturday schools were part of the topographical society where we had data. And that's what drives me today. I sit on boards and committees for the city that has access to data and information that's incredible. But I don't know who I can share it with or give it to or how somebody might be able to utilize it in a way to benefit whatever it is they're doing. Because, again, We don't have opportunities to get together to sit and chat. We don't have venues where we can do what we're doing right now, because it becomes very difficult. We have to create. This is why I'm so happy that we have this situation in this forum, in this format, to talk. I was with a group of people the other day, and we were grouped at tables. We were talking about prison reform, and I know a little bit about prison reform and the law. And the folks were talking about, oh, we're going to do this, and we want to do that, and we want to do that. And they looked at me, and they said, well, what are we going to do? And I said, well, first of all, you got to tell me how we're going to do that, because I don't know you. You don't know me. You don't know who I know. I don't know who you know. I don't know what you know. I said, you know, can I trust you? Can you trust me? You know, what have we done together to show that we are? I said, so, you know, we're talking about all these things we want to do. We got to go and get back to some very basic fundamental things that allow us to be more comfortable with each other. Because, again, I have to deal with the white attorney's ice is more, it's colder or something like that, or melt faster or something. I don't know. But people have these images, or I should, yep. Because, when I get a call that says, brother, I know, oh, man, here we go, that I got to diminish. I mean, on top of what I love being part of my community and giving, but I have to go out and compete against those well-armed people who are trying to take your house away, trying to take your kids away, take your stuff away. So I need to be able to compete at least. So the expectations are really, really high. So this is why I spend as much time as possible trying to educate people. You know, let's have think tanks. Let's have seminars. Let's do the things that empower us. Because this is what other folks do. You know, they, like I said, they have the Downtown Athletic Club, the Milwaukee Club, the Women's Club, the Scottish Rights Club, the Italian Community Center. I mean, they go to these places and sit down and talk and share, plot and plan, and how to get our stuff. just to break it down a little bit, but this is what they do. And we are sitting, we're not plotting and planning to keep our stuff or understanding even what we have. And now we have another generation of, and like I said, having access to data, I can tell you who owns all of the Class B licenses in the city. I can tell you how much they make, where they live. And most of them don't live in the city. Most of them don't spend in the city.
Right.
There's no circulation of the money that we spend back into, and this is how you grow. You have to find mechanisms. First of all, you have to understand, and you have to have knowledge of why we are in the condition that we're in. And then we have to discuss, how can we attack it from what point of view can we attack it? Again, I was talking with somebody the other day. I did an article called Sagging Pants. Is it a fashion statement or a health hazard? And when I explained it as being a health hazard, lady said, man, I never thought of it this way, but yeah, it's a total health hazard. I mean, so we need to start looking at things from different perspectives. And I could send you the article. I have several articles that I've written, and I'll send it to you and share it with you. But we need to brainstorm to, I don't mind your picking my brain or challenging me. This is how I got to be on this telephone call and asked to do this today, because of the challenges. And we need to challenge each other, in the spirit of learning, in the spirit of knowledge, in the spirit of what Sankofa and what we have been trying to, what I listened to in the libation, or what I listened to when Lou Rawls were, these are we have to use those as real-life anthems, to propel us into becoming more knowledgeable, because our power, is just, it gets frustrating sometimes. But I'm glad we're able to do that.
I can understand. Hey, I have another sponsor announcement I'm going to make.
Okay, sure. I'm at your disposal.
Okay. At EDOC Advice, we provide specific medical answers to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer faculty of EDOCs, who are licensed physicians and health professionals, who make themselves available to those globally seeking a better understanding of health issues and medical practice.
We also welcome sponsors. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, $IRVANAINSTI, and PayPal Sankofa. All right, thank you. Okay, go ahead. this is very interesting.
Okay, well, if there are any questions, because I can, you know, I can.
Well, you know, I have a question, and I was just wondering, you know, there seems to be a lack of trust, especially in attorneys. You know, how a lot of us, I mean, because we're thinking, you know, they're just out to line their pockets. They're not trying to help us. Is there something that you're doing or you know that other people are doing in regards to just informing people, getting this news out there? Is there a cost, you know, if somebody wants to know, you know, is it based on how much money they make as far as making a will out? And, I mean, some people, you know, I think they've been told that, well, you can, what do they call that, declaration of when a person's near death, sometimes they can write certain things in
that. Yeah, but how valid would that be? I mean, it would be valid, and it's challengeable. You want to do things while you're knowledgeable, able, and capable of doing them. You don't want you don't want to put your position self in a position where it's you know where it's going to be challenged. Yeah, I mean, you know, I do simple wills for a very basic price. Very basic. And that is putting all the information together for you and then coming out, sitting with you, going over it. And I do it as part of my community give back. You know, and it depends on how complex you want to make it. I mean, I've done wills from simple wills. I try to do simple wills because those are the basic and quickest, you know, for us to just gain some control of ourselves. But I've done some complex wills up to 50 and 60 pages, which had, you know, but these are people who had dividends and assets and homes in the Bahamas and, you know, all different types of things, had trusts that they put together because they had funds. But, you know, many of the people that I talk to, basically, if you have a house, or if you have a pension, or if you have, you know, some small items, artwork and things like that, then, you know, just to preserve that, just to preserve those things that we do own and have. But it all depends on the depth of what needs to be done. But let me tell you, what I get paid is nowhere near the amount of time I put in. Right. And that is my investment. You know.
I would challenge our community to consider forming some little clubs. We meet around all sorts of things like bowling or golf, or dancing, and perhaps in that type of club, every member in the club is prepared to, in this week, work on the items that they would want in their will, or even the planning of their funerals. This GoFundMe is a bit much, I think, versus where people have the ability to prepay for their cremation or burial plot, the casket. So I think groups, in terms of the looking at assets and wealth, may be an idea where a group of people who have some things in common say we're going to work on making sure that these elements are all in place, like the three items that you presented in the flyer: durable power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, a will. A helpful thing that the members of that club work on.
Well, let me just say this. I've been asked to participate next week, and I've scheduled to do that if it's necessary and desired. But these are the kind of things that we're going to have to talk about doing and then put them into some type of action plan. I'm always willing if people are interested in doing the right thing to participate and support good causes. That's why when Queen Mother called me and I said, hey, there's no doubt about it. You know, this is a good forum, and I'm sure it's going to provide people with some information that will either spark discussion or start some kind of creative thinking. We got to think creatively here, and then we can share with each other, because I'm willing to, based on what I know, share it with you. And I want to get people to share things with me so we can, you know, put things together to say, well, this is how we can go about doing that. Because I can tell you, there are times when I run across opportunities that I couldn't take advantage of, but I couldn't find anybody who had the prerequisites and set up ready to go to take advantage of it. But when you're at the downtown athletic club and the Milwaukee club, and, you know, you can discuss those things and, you know, have your brother from the Pee Wee League ready to step up and take advantage of it. And here we are floundering, you know, not knowing why we don't have anything.
Well, Brother Evans, before I'm going to ask you to, if you can give us a closing statement, but I just wanted to just thank everybody for joining us, dude. Today, I want to thank the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee for support for this programming and sharing their vision for the unity and following African-centric principles and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives today. We look forward to bringing you more programs that you will hope will help you and that you will enjoy. So visit our sponsor at www.edocadvice.com. We're going to say good night. Stay safe to everybody. Sister Didi, Dr. James, Queen Mother Shabaka, and Attorney Evans, any closing statements you'd like to give?
Well, I can't say enough how much I appreciate the fact that I've been asked to just come on and rant and rave. I know there's been a lot of rant and raving and probably no questions answered. But, again, to just peek our thinking about things that we may not normally think about, then, you know, we should be able to establish some mechanism to get those questions answered. I can always be contacted by phone or email, and for individuals who are interested in getting additional information, and I'm always willing to answer questions whenever I can. I'm not one of those you call and I start the meter running. You know, but if it goes past 15 or 20 minutes and it gets redundant, the meter, you might hear a click. So what I try to do is be available to people because, again, my association with ASCAC and Sankofa and the efforts that they're putting forward, I think is part of our goal and mission as to how we should give back to our community and make it stronger.
Well, we thank you, and we thank you again, and we definitely have to revisit this again. And so thank you for coming on today.
I'm scheduled for next week, I think. And if not, if there's a change, let me know. But next week,
we'll
I can.
Next week.
Yeah, people might have questions then and more information, and then I could be more specific than, you know, just the general conversation we've been having today.
Awesome. Okay. All right, well. we thank you again, and this was just so wonderful having you.
All right. Hotep to all of you.
Hotep.
Stay safe. Good health.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living. stars up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. A long time coming, but I know